do a lot of meditation. I do a lot of film. I have my team that, you know, they help me a lot just to figure out what I'm doing well, and, you know, also watching the game when I play bad and tell and show me the reason why I'm not, you know, I'm not playing. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, why am I not playing? But then you go watch the clip and you're like, that's why. And those are the reasons, you know, I'm trying to fix those reasons so I could be on the floor, because I think I could help this team with the way I'm playing.
That was Chris Boucher. I know exactly how he feels. Why am I not playing? Oh, watch the tape. Ooh. That's why.
Nothing more humbling than a film breakdown when you think you should be playing more minutes.
Yeah. Fan Morning Show. Raptors last night. 102-90 win over the Washington Wizards. Their defense, it looked like it might be back, but Blake, give it to me straight. Was it just because it was the Washington Wizards?
Well, I don't know. Everyone's telling me the Wizards are good. I slept on the Wizards at the quarter pool or at the quarterway mark. It was like, oh, that's the team you missed on.
I love that right now, like, Ailish and I have no idea what you're doing, because this is obviously some, he's gotten into Twitter fights with people
like,
over the Wizards.
I don't watch your Twitter fights.
And you and I are like, yeah.
I don't get into Twitter fights.
No,
you don't. I'm just saying you took a take somewhere. Where'd you put that take that the Wizards suck?
I had them out of the playoffs when I drew us. And then I think when we did an NBA whip around the other week, and I was like, this is a team that I missed on. But guess what? Did I? I don't think so. 4-7 over their last 11. Come down to earth. I was not, I think they can score. I was not a believer at all in their defense, which has come back down to earth. So I think this is, you can look at this a couple different ways. First of all, you can, as we've said with the Leafs a bunch during their winning streak, you can only beat the team in front of you. And yes, the Wizards are coming back down to earth, but they also have Bradley Beal and Spencer Dinwiddie and our guy Daniel Gafford, Kyle Kuzma. You know, they have
foul trouble. That's what changed the game.
Daniel Gafford foul trouble also kills me. He got 6 rebounds in 15 minutes. He only played 15 minutes because of foul trouble. The over-under on rebounds was 6.5, and I thought it was an easy make. He at least still managed to get the over 1.5 blocks, so we're okay. But to do all that in 15 minutes. Anyway, the Wizards have been coming back down to earth a lot, but when you're in the position the Raptors are in, where you come into this game at 10-13 out of the playoff picture, you got to take any win you can get and any step forward for your defense you can get. This is also coming off of, they had a good defensive performance against Memphis again, even though they lost that game and Ja didn't play, but it defensively it was solid. And then with no Giannis, they had an awesome defensive game against the Bucks. So it's not necessarily just the, hey, this is a Wizards bump. If it was a random blip, I could see that. But this is 3 games in a row now that they've looked more like themselves defensively. And I thought they did a really good job limiting the kind of open three-point attempts that are so prevalent when they have bad defensive nights. Like, it stands out so badly. And they did a really good job on their own glass in this one. And the Daniel Gafford foul trouble is part of that, I guess. And Montrezl Harrell still got 3. But Montrezl Harrell only getting 3 offensive rebounds in 30 minutes against this team is feels like a miracle the way things have been going. So really impressive defensive performance from them again. Three in a row there. So things are moving in the right direction. And it's, I know 100 points is not the marker that it once was.
Yeah.
But this 3 games in a row, you held an opponent under 100 points, which is it's pretty rare. The Raptors haven't done it in almost 2 years.
They've looked awesome.
Wow.
And yeah, of course you can make something about every single one of these games. Second half of the Grizzlies, it's only 1 half. No Giannis on a second half of a back to back, and then this one, a Wizards team that might be coming a little bit back down earth. Also, it's hilarious. Bradley Beal, I swear to God, every time he plays the Raptors, I'm like, this is the guy that you say is so good.
Bradley Beal's also like year 4 now of like, oh well, he'd defend well if his team was good and he was dialed in.
I know. Bradley Beal is arguably my number one player of, I know you guys say he's great, but I don't buy it. I still think I'd take Fred VanVleet over him in a must-win game. And I know that sounds crazy, but I just would. But the defense, the thing that I'm noticing from these last few games is that we had these questions about, should they stay with this aggressive style of defense? And there were real questions and concerns when you're giving up the points that the Raptors were giving up, and you're going, oh, maybe they do have to make some adjustments. These last couple of games, you've seen what the plan is supposed to be. And I love when you look at NBA players who are not just rookies and randoms, like Drew Holiday types, making horrific decisions because they've been swarmed and they've been put in these compromising positions where they don't know what the hell to do. It reminds me a little bit of a python, where like a python kills you because it cuts off all the oxygen to your brain, right? That's what it does. And that's what the Raptors defense does to players sometimes when they play this way consistently, is they python you. They cut off the oxygen. You make some stupid play and all of a sudden it's going the other way. So I think that listen, the defense was in such a low point that it's kind of one of those, well, how could it stay that bad for that long when you have this personnel? But I've been pretty encouraged. I'll buy a little bit of the Raptors defense improving and actually looking like they were supposed to be and what we thought they were for a dollar.
Yeah. Beal and Dinwiddie averaged a combined 35 points and they scored 23 in that one.
Yeah.
I think that's a good indicator. Those are your point of attack guys. Those are the highest, you know, starting a breakdown guys, and they were pretty limited. And they didn't, I mean, part of it is like this isn't a Steph Curry level emergency, but they didn't have to get quite as aggressive to keep those guys in front of them and limit them a little bit. Like they still had an aggressive game and they had some foul trouble.
Yep.
But they weren't doing the whole like, oh, we're going to trap you all the way at half court and make you beat us that way.
You know what though? That's a really great game script for them in terms of winning. But I also really liked it that if the Raptors do get up on you and they get a lead, right? We've seen games where the Raptors have fallen down and they've actually fought their way back into it. Mm. But when you have a lead, I kind of look at them as a team that should be able to protect it because of that defense, because it's just such a grind to get back into basketball games against the Raptors. It shouldn't be easy. So I think that's the most encouraging thing, is that was a real, oh, right, that's what the Raptors' identity is supposed to be as a team, and they came through with it, and I like that. So, yeah, I will give that a little bit more credit than just simply beating the Wizards on a Sunday afternoon.
There are two other things I would pull as positives from this game, or bigger positives at least. The big one's Pascal Siakam.
Yeah.
JD, you were tired of 40-degree days.
Yeah.
That was a scorcher.
100.
31 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. The Raptors won his minutes. Mm-hmm. He shot 10 of 21, got to the free throw line a season high 12 times. He had a season, whatever he finished with, I think he finished with 24 in the first half, which was the first time he'd done that. In again, like 2 years, February 2020, I think was the last time that he had done that. That was obviously, you know, he tailored off in the second half, but they were playing ahead and they were playing comfortably. That first half was, first of all, the first quarter, he was just living at the free throw line. Mm-hmm. And then the second quarter, he was unguardable. And that was, other than the Kings game, and the Kings game almost like, it almost doesn't feel as impressive because like, he had 32 points, but it was only on 12 shots. So even though it's way more efficient, it didn't feel like quite a takeover. Mm-hmm. Whereas this was like, yes, for an entire half, Pascal Siakam is the offense and everything's orbiting around that really, really well. So I think great Siakam game. Him and Barnes are really starting to pick up a chemistry together, which is nice to see after what the talk was the first couple games there. You a little happier with Siakam after that one?
So I'm going to stay consistent with the whole, you can only control what's in front of you. One of my biggest knocks on Siakam, actually there's two I can both point to that he overcame in this one. One is that he doesn't go to the free throw line enough. Like he doesn't hunt poor matchups and try to get guys into fouls. And people often go, oh, why don't the Raptors have more foul calls? Oh, this Raptors aren't getting enough calls. And I've always thought, well, a lot of that is because the two main drivers of the offense, well, Fred VanVleet is very small, so he's easy to block and it's not an easy, like, draws fouls guy.
Doesn't get to the line much.
Yep, and then they have Siakam, who's patented moves are usually falling away from the basket when he gets to the rim. And that's a real reason why the Raptors lose the free throw battle on certain nights.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you can have that approach, but it's an evade contact or finish through versus finish through contact decision. And Siakam's very good at getting his shot off in a way that a defender can't affect it.
Totally.
But that also means, although career high free throw rate right now,
but that's it. That's what I'm seeing. He looks like a guy who oftentimes is on the verge of breaking out and having one of those games. And my criticism of him has been, hey, why is it that you're not taking a few more shots a game? Why is it that you're actually not imposing yourself more on some of these games? Because the numbers are fine, right? But that was the whole point, is that no one thinks Siakam sucks. So can we please stop doing this whole straw man thing of people who think he stinks or doesn't belong in the NBA? Like, it's infuriating. It's way too much. No one thinks that about Siakam. The question is he a star? Is he a real elevator player? What actually is he in terms of where he sits amongst the other max players in the NBA? And for a year where Siakam has said, I want to be the man, there have been a lot of games I know he's worked his way back from an injury, but where he's been a little too passive. And I've wondered, is this Fred not getting him involved enough? Is this the coaching staff not building things around him? Is it the injuries that are around him? What exactly is it? Last night, the Wizards didn't really have guys that could guard Siakam. That didn't really, they didn't have a good mix of players that could... Think about who was defending him throughout that game. How many possessions they were like, now let's try this guy. Now let's try this guy. And Siakam hunted those mismatches. And I loved seeing that. That's what I want to see. When you have a good matchup, go at it. Draw a foul. Someone's too small, take him to the basket. What was Alvin's line last night? It was great. Don't settle, go to the metal. I was like, yes. Yeah, it was great. And I thought I thought that about Siakam. I said, hey, someone's small, someone's tiny, bully them. Oh, wait, someone's going to gap you and give you space? Well, you're supposed to be a good enough shooter now where you set your feet and you knock that down. So last night, I just thought his awareness of who was in front of him and just taking advantage of those matchups with just a variety of different ways of scoring. He didn't just score one way. He got to the free throw line. He was getting the basket. He was hitting jump shots. I loved it. I thought that that is why people get frustrated with you, is because you are capable of those things. So now let's just see it with a little bit more consistency.
So the other positive from the game, I thought, brings us to the first drop we have. It's one big number, and it's the first time Vic's got something for me to lead into it.
Excited. You're dealing with numbers all day long. Decimal points, high frequencies, bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, I like that.
That sounds like good job, Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey. McConaughey. Yeah.
McConaughey.
Yeah.
So what's that from?
Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street. Gotta add that to my list.
Yeah.
Sucks.
I know, that's what I heard.
Yeah. So
tell us the big number.
It's more of a little one today, but Raptors right now, dead last in the NBA in bench scoring. 24.3 points per game from their bench players. Last night against the Washington Wizards, Chris Boucher, Yuta Watanabe, Delano Banton, Svi Mihailuk, all plus 12 or better. That's not scoring, of course. They did combine for 31 points, so well above their average. And this is kind of why I wanted to lead in with that Chris Boucher quote, because he had a big game and suddenly the bench looks spicy again when him and Banton are connecting like that. But the four primary Raptors bench guys, all with monster plus minuses in that game. And you don't want to use individual single game plus minus too much, but what that tells you is that the times the Raptors went to lineups with one or two starters where they have been having their heads kicked in all season were really, really solid in that game. And at halftime, it was even more dramatic because all nine players who had played had double-digit positive plus minuses, where it was like, hey, anything the Raptors are throwing out there is working. And then the second half, it was the starters who actually gave some quarter, and it was the bench that was like, nope, we're holding up, play the second half more or less even. And I think that this team, obviously they're still not quote-unquote a depth team, but once you get OG back, once you get Ken Birch back, if those guys are actually exist anymore, because they're now like not even being spotted at practice, which is concerning. If they can stabilize that 6-9 spot in the rotation a little bit, I think it lets things breathe just a little bit easier, where there's a little less pressure on, you know, first of all, you can get away with playing Fred VanVleet 33 minutes when he has foul trouble, but also just not feeling like every single minute with the starters is a must-win minute.
So what's the one big number again?
Just that all four of them had a plus 12 or higher.
So this is one where I go, yeah, okay, no. When Ailish, what was your question? Are they hot or are they just the Washington Wizards? This game script was the perfect game script for that bench. Like, they came in to...
But your boy Davis.
No. Davis is the softest player in the NBA. Don't ever call that guy my boy. It's actually so funny when you watch guys where they just have no heart and they just have no willingness and they just are like, yeah, I'm just here to be a three-point shooter. I'll just catch it and I'll shoot it and that's what I do. So everybody just watch me do it. No, the Raptors bench got put in an incredibly advantageous position, and Banton hit that 1-3 early where he was just wide open, and I'm going, wow, that's nice. But let's be real here. Their bench is G League players for the most part. I really like Yuta. I think that he's actually somebody that brings energy and defense and some shooting. Weirdly, he's underrated because like we talk about him a lot, and yet I still watch him every game and go, where are the bad moments from you, right? The rest of the bench is G League guys. And they came in and they played a Wizards team that already knew that they were dead, that didn't really care about the rest of that game. Siakam had already killed them, and they were just walking dead, and the bench took advantage of some
minutes. I don't know if that's entirely true. It was the first It was the first half where they did most of their work.
I don't buy anything from the bench last night. Like, the bench sucks. That, like you just said, that they're, last in scoring. They had one good game against the Wizards. I'm just not taking anything from it. So kudos to them for having a game, but there's no, like, this isn't like Siakam or the defense where I looked at those two things and said, oh, these actually feel like we've been seeing signs of life and this is a momentum builder. From the bench, I'm looking at it more as, yeah, that's nice. This is a one-off. I don't trust you to ever carry the Raptors again in another meaningful game or in an actual tough spot. Usually my feeling is, please build the lead up so when the bench comes in, there's a bit of a cushion.
Yeah, which I think is fair. And I don't know. So just going to take the little positive from it because they had been struggling mightily.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Give them their win. I'm just saying I'm not buying anything extra from it.
Yeah, the big number was not a, hey, this is fixed now.
Yeah. I hope it does. I believe in Banton. I really do. I think that eventually he's going to come around.
I noticed that because I watched a little bit of G League. I don't know if I ever told you.
You guys are just the G League.
Big G League gal over here. The G League stands for the gal, and I put the gal in G League. I don't know. I tried.
The gal.
But Delano looks so much better in the NBA than he does when he plays in the G League games. Like, I don't know if he just plays down to that type of competition or he sees an opportunity when he's on the big stage to really shine. But I feel like, Blake, you would know why that is the case.
Yeah, so part of it is, you know, where he's at in his development right now. And he did have that one really nice game when he first went down and he had 30 points and 9 assists. But he also had 8 turnovers. And then he goes down on Saturday and, again, 23 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. It's a decent-looking stat line, but he shoots 10 of 25 and has 5 turnovers again. And this is when I've talked this year about how I want Banton down with the 905. It's not that I don't think he's a capable NBA guy. Right now, his NBA role is, we talk about kind of sheltered minutes when we talk about some NHL players and a third pairing defense or whatever. With Delano Banton, he's getting kind of sheltered minutes right now where the bench minutes haven't been easy because it's not the best environment, but he plays a lot of his minutes with Fred VanVleet. And he plays a lot of his minutes with the freedom to grab a rebound and run, and everything with that bench unit is transition, transition, transition. Where Banton struggles right now is when the game slows down in the half court, and he can only really get east-west. He's having trouble getting downhill. And I think that that's something where in the G League, and this is why I want him getting those reps there, is he's got basically all the opportunity in the world to work on that and take shots doing that and try to build that part of his game out. Whereas at the NBA level, if something's not there in transition, they generally, you know, slow it down and sometimes get the ball out of Banton's hands. So I think, you know, part of it is that, and part of it is the freedom that he has in the G League to try all these things that he'll eventually need. And he gets a chance to try those again this morning because they're playing at 11 a.m. at Scotiabank. And Banton, Flynn, Bonga, Johnson, Champagne, all down with the 905 for that game this morning.
If it wasn't our bedtime at 11 a.m., I'd be there. See my boy Bonga in action. We got the text line going as always. A couple texts, Leafs related. You know, we want to talk about that Leafs weekend as well. 2 losses, but we felt some promising losses. And so we got some texts from some listeners, such as Dan from Coburg. I will take a loss anytime to see that type of character building game. Love that from Dan. I think that's kind of the main takeaway that we had in the 6 o'clock hour was that although they lost, they showed a lot of heart and character, and that is the type of thing that was maybe missing in the playoffs. And when we look towards learning lessons and things you can take away from a loss, sometimes a loss like that can actually be a really good building block for a team that we can have grit and we can have heart when we're losing to either A, come back and push it to a shootout, or as last night, you know, it wasn't that close in the score, but they stood up for each other at times and they had a little bit of physicality that had been missing.
Yeah, Elliot Friedman at 8 o'clock to discuss what's going to be the fallout from that game. Justin Bourne at 9 to discuss further some of his takeaways from this weekend from some of those tough losses, but big learning experiences. Many things to chew on today, but keep the text coming. 590-590. Let us know what you thought about the Leafs weekend. As always, through the show, you can hit us up on the socials at Blake Murphy ODC, at JD Bunkus, and at Ailish Forfar. So, things to chew on.
Oh, yeah.
Yum, yum, yum.
It's time. Sorry.
Wakey, wakey, Blake.
I'm awake. I thought you were going to do the it's time for something to chew on.
That's all you,
brought
man.
To you by Great Canadian Meats. So we're going to talk to Ross Tucker. After
Wake and Blake.
Yeah. Yeah. I've wanted to use that for something for so long. Yeah. So
that should be like when it's a take that's like a little bit like,
yeah,
it's a little bit out there.
So we're going to talk to Ross Tucker about all of the NFL yesterday. The thing that stood out the most, and to me as like a stats geek, is the Baltimore Ravens come back. There's 12 seconds left. They score a touchdown. They need an extra point to tie. And you have Justin Tucker, who's the most automatic extra point or anything that there is in the history of kicking balls. And they go for two.
Yeah.
And John Harbaugh says after the game that he explains the decision. We were pretty much out of cornerbacks at the time. It was an opportunity to try to win the game right there. So they had been banged up with a bunch of injuries. Lamar's such a great short yardage weapon. They decide to go for two there. Something to chew on is, I mean, I've been chewing on this the whole day, basically, since then. I don't really know what to make of it, other than to say that this seems like a situation of kind of, you got to call it in the air, where everyone had the take against it after they didn't convert on it.
That's not true. I texted my brother, who's a Ravens fan, as they were lining up to do it. I said, I hate this. I can't believe that they're doing this. You have Justin Tucker on your team. There's no way Ben Roethlisberger is scoring another touchdown. I don't care who is in your secondary. That guy with the pink hair, I can't remember his name on the Ravens, but he's just a horrible corner. They pick on him every single week. I don't care that he's out there. The Ravens, that was such a stupid-ass decision. So I texted him before. I'm not calling in the air. I have receipts on hating
let's
it.
Let's see the timestamps.
I
stamps.
Always hate it. I'll show you the timestamps.
So the something to chew on per Next Gen Stats, which is the NFL's advanced stats team, the Ravens should have kicked the extra point. It gives them an extra 7.6% in win probability for that game.
Eat it, nerds!
There's something to chew on, though, is whether all of those cornerback injuries and Lamar Jackson tilt you the other way on it. Obviously, they lost, so it's all chewed up at this point.
I think that Harbaugh said that after the game so that it was, well, you can't really. So Marlon Humphrey really did get hurt.
Yeah.
He's out for a significant portion of time. So do I, is it some, it's like the two truths and a lie kind of thing. It's like a partial truth. Yes. Did they have some injuries to the secondary? Absolutely. The Ravens are just a team that's been beat up all season long. It's one of the stories of their year. But I'm sorry. Again, you go win that coin toss and you give the ball to Lamar Jackson, who just drove down the field on the Steelers. Like, you have Justin Tucker, the greatest kicker of all time, that I trust from 60 yards out to go and like bang you out a win against a Steelers offense that in the first half had what? Did they have 3 points in the first half? I think maybe they did. Maybe they got their first three in the first half, but they were just brutal. Nah, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying that was a smart call. I don't like that the whole community just rallied around it and loved Harbaugh for it because he had cojones, but I just thought it sucked. I thought it was a bad call. And he had to justify it somehow, and he did. So fine. But no, something to chew on.
And Lamar's got to make a better throw. Andrew's got to make that catch.
Yep. Although he had to make like an incredibly athletic move just to avoid getting
just to get his hand on it. Yeah.
So that was that one.
Anyway.
Great one. Great. Something to chew on. Let's ask Ross about it.
Yeah. We can ask Ross Tucker about that. We can ask Ross Tucker about a very big Buffalo Bills game tonight.
I can barely sleep at night waiting.
And the rest of week 13. All that's next.
It's the morning.
On the Fan Morning Show.
I could sleep all weekend thinking about my Buffalo Bills.
Sports at 590 The Fan.
Woo!
It's the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Alice, what do you want to tell Joe Byron right now?
Bing bong. I have my mic off.
It's just all break. Hey, today's challenge, will Alice get through the rest of the show without swearing?
Yeah, because there's this. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
We'll see. That's a pretty good tease, right? Stay tuned.
Will she have her job by tomorrow morning?
Yeah. And will Ross Tucker still come on this show after paying his debts and getting reviewed right now? It's Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, hosts the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, rostucker.com. So Ailish is our food critic on this show.
I sure am.
We got the Take 5 bars.
We got them.
So thank you. Incredible. Like, you paid a lot to ship these up here.
Yeah, that was the biggest concern is, but we got the box and it was like 30 US dollars to ship them here. I felt bad.
Yeah, we did. We did feel bad. But Ailish, would you like to give Ross your review of the bar?
Okay, so we had them for breakfast on the show.
Yeah, we did.
And I think we got them like Monday or Tuesday. So we hadn't talked to you till today. They're good. They're bordering on great, but the best part for me is the pretzel crunch. Like, I think that is super underrated, and that could be something that anyone listening that works for any chocolate companies could take into account to add pretzels into things will definitely help. But I don't think that they're life-changing.
They're not elite, is what it's come across. Good, not great, was the review.
Here's the, okay, so I have a lot to say.
Yeah, right. I know, you were very quiet, and I didn't want to hurt your feelings, but that's just the review of the show.
Yeah. So number one, okay, a bet is a bet. Like, we had a bet. So it doesn't matter how much the shipping is. Yeah. My grandpa told me when I was like 4 years old, you never welch on a bet. I don't know if that's something you should tell a four-year-old, but that's what he said. So I've learned that.
As he was like giving you to a different family. It's like, how did this out? He's like, all right, you got to go live with them now.
Grandpa, I don't even know what a bet is. You're already worried about me welching on one? I don't even know what a bet is. Yeah. What are you talking about? Maybe my grandpa bet a little bit.
Sounds
anyway,
like it. He's referring you.
So, that's number one. Number two, the real question in my mind is, are they better than coffee crisps in your mind?
I would say it's very close. Can I tell you the reason why I didn't find it to be elite? I actually love pretzels. I love Reese, but this is the curse that comes with being Reese. They always make these products that are different than the cups, but ultimately it's just like the cups are the best. And so all I end up feeling when I eat that bar is, somebody get me some cups, stat.
Mm.
Yeah, but it has all the ingredients of cups.
I get it.
But then you add the pretzel and it just takes it to another level. Man.
Pretzel was the best part of it. I really enjoyed the crunch and a little bit of saltiness that it added. It was a little bit of something there.
I think I've tried pretty much every candy bar that I'm aware of.
Well, we got to get you coffee crisp.
It's by far my favorite. Not even by, like, I like a Twix or a Kit Kat or a Reese's peanut butter cup. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the proof is in the pudding with my daughters and what I do when they get their Halloween candy and where I go. I mean, it's very obvious where my allegiance lies.
You got to get Blake on the analytics of what the breakdown is on the percentages of the way that you go after those candy bags, what ends up coming out.
I don't have the analytics on that. I just think if a bar's best selling point is that part of it tastes like a better bar, I have trouble putting it at number one. And I know this isn't just a Ross thing. This was the 2019 number one candy bar in the United States. I forget what the source was, but when I was looking this up.
I love how Blake has this stat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Has a stat for even the chocolate bar.
One big number. Yeah. Take five. Number one in 2019. But I don't feel too strongly about it. And Ross, thank you for coming through on those, because it was a nice pickup last week in one of the early segments.
Also, thank you to Dartmouth Big Green men's football. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So,
breakfast of champions.
That's right.
Breakfast of champions.
We eat garbage in the morning. That's one thing. So we got to start with the Ravens, the call to go for two at the end of the game, because Blake just outlined that, hey, for all the people that love the analytics of that move, it actually decreased their odds of winning had they not just kicked the extra point. 7% chance, according to the numbers, or better, had they just taken that sucker to overtime. It was brought up in the post game by Harbaugh that their secondary was beat up and that played into the decision making. But what did you think of that call to go for two when you have Justin Tucker, Lamar Jackson, the better football team, and a Steelers team that looked to be a little bit on the ropes there?
Yeah, I liked it. And I actually did not think that the Steelers looked like they were on the ropes. I thought the Steelers got the better of the action in the second half, and in particular the fourth quarter. I mean, Deontay Johnson was wide open for two touchdowns. They were actually running the ball down the Ravens' throat there with Najee Harris and Benny Snell. And then on the second Deontay Johnson touchdown, Marlon Humphrey, their best corner, like their last real starting corner, because Marcus Peters is already out, he reportedly tore his pec tendon. So I think that they thought, man, by the time we get to overtime, we weren't able to stop him even when we had Marlon Humphrey. And now they're going to be able to just I think they felt like, clearly, obviously, that they had a better chance to get the two-point conversion than they did of winning in overtime. Because that's the thing about, like, the analytics, and I'm a big believer in data and using data, but, like, that number doesn't take into account that Marlon Humphrey just got hurt. So, I don't know, does that make it go from 7% or 8% to 4%? I don't know what the number is there. Or that number also doesn't take into account how the fourth quarter went, which was, it looked to me like the Ravens' defense was wearing down and they couldn't cover Deontay Johnson and they were running the ball. Benny Snell and Najee Harris were running it very well. And by the way, Mark Andrews is the best skill guy, best receiver for the Ravens. He's wide open. It's a two-yard pass, you know, and we're obviously singing a very different tune if they just connect on that. So I liked the decision.
I'm with you, Ross. I know I presented the numbers before you came on, but yeah, the combination of the injuries and that Lamar-Mark Andrews combo is about the best combo you could have for a two-point. But they did lose. They're 8-4 now. The Bengals, 7-5. Steelers, 6-5-1. Browns, 6-6. Are any of the teams in the AFC North actually good? Because it feels like my opinion changes on all four of them week to week, and Cleveland and Pittsburgh, I'm just straight up not buying at this point. But it feels like a pretty weak group of teams for a division where everyone's over 500.
I think Cleveland and Pittsburgh are average. I think Cincinnati and Baltimore are above average. I don't think any of them are great or playing great. I think the Ravens have been sort of ravaged by injury, and they do not have a very good answer for when teams are coming with the all-out blitz. They still don't have. I mean, they still haven't really come up with a very good answer for that. It's pretty disappointing. Doesn't feel like Lamar Jackson's played well in well over a month. You know, you go back to the Dolphins game. It's been a while since Lamar Jackson's really played at an MVP caliber level. And then for Cincinnati, you know, they didn't have their starting right tackle or center yesterday, and it showed up. Because that offensive line had been playing better. They had been protecting Burrow. You know, Mixon had been doing a nice job running the ball. But without their center and right tackle, who might be their two best O-linemen, by the way, they took a huge step back. I mean, Burrow was getting smashed all game, even after Bosa left with the head injury.
So it feels like tonight is going to be this huge narrative game in terms of, like, oh, who's the top dog in the AFC? But I actually kind of want to pivot off of the question that Blake just asked you, because the team that beat them, the Chargers, right? They're the most, like, up and down team of the season. We never know. Oh, the Chargers, they're going to be great. Oh, we really buy this stuff. And then the next week we're like, oh, the Chargers are terrible. But if you look at the AFC just in general, right? The Chiefs have that win last night, but it feels like it's really hard to put a finger on exactly what is going on, but the offense still, like, they only had 12 points last night. So, okay, maybe you're a defensive team, but I don't think that's the identity that's going to win you a Super Bowl. But if we take the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Patriots who didn't play this weekend, and we just take them out of the mix, and I ask you, Ross Tucker, out of all those teams that are vying for positions in the postseason, right, the Ravens, the Chargers, the Bengals, all these up-and-down teams, the Colts, which one are you the most afraid of entering a playoff game? Which one do you think is the actual, like, I could see them getting hot, I could see them actually making a Super Bowl, or are they all too flawed?
It's a good question. Probably still the Ravens, but I don't know. I think the point you're making is a good one. Yeah, I'm not excited about it. The Chargers could do it for a game, but then the next game they would be bad and they wouldn't be able to do it. I think the thing I'm hearing as you're talking, and I hadn't really thought about this, is just how important it is to get the number one seed. Mm-hmm. We already know that. But it just doesn't seem like any of these teams, these other teams, are really capable of winning three in a row, including, you know, two or three on the road. You know, whereas you get that number one seed, and I know you took Buffalo and Kansas City and New England out of it, but I'm not even sure Kansas City and Buffalo are capable of that right now. It feels like the Patriots are the best team. And, you know, people, A, let them get Mac Jones. They let them get Matthew Judon. And now it looks like they're about to let them get the number one seed. I mean, tonight is huge. You know, it's funny. I feel like every other team should be rooting for the Bills tonight. You know, it's like that you'd rather take your shot against the Bills in the playoffs than let New England get the number one seed and have two games in Foxborough. So I feel like if you're all the other teams we just mentioned, you kind of want the Bills to win. Plus, you know, then it will be more congested for the number one seed as well.
How do you see tonight's game going? I mean, obviously I'm a Bills fan, and I think it's one of the biggest games that they're going to play in the last little while. And they also have a rematch in 2 weeks, and then they play the Bucs as well. And I think the next three games could be a huge narrative for even Josh Allen and his MVP race, which we kind of given away to Tom Brady. But where do you see tonight's game falling?
So two things. First, before I forget, Alish, I think I've asked you guys this before. Mm-hmm. Percentage of NFL fans in Toronto that are Bills fans?
It's hard to say.
It's not as big as you think, but it is quite sizable. It's just in Canada, everybody
has...
Is
it 50%?
No. That's the thing is everybody here has a different team, right? Like there's a big base of Bills fans for sure. I think it's like the biggest base. Mm. But then there are also a ton of Patriots fans, a ton of Bears fans. Like there are fans from every... Like you just meet people in Toronto randomly. Like I have a friend who's an Arizona I have two friends who are Arizona Cardinals fans who are from Canada.
Oof.
Okay? So like it's just, it's very, very much all over the map. Blake is a Jaguars fan. I'm a Seahawks fan. Like that's the real Canadian identity is we just don't really have a... There's one team that everyone gravitates to. It's mm-hmm. like... There's just bigger bases. In BC, there are more Seahawks fans than anything else. And in Toronto, there are more Bills fans. But it's not like this 50% number. I would say it would probably, like, if I was trying to really, really get close to it and I had money on the line, I would say 22% are Bills fans in Toronto.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I was just curious. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. Number two, in terms of the game, you know, it's just, here's the two concerns I have. One is the Bills have been very up and down mm-hmm. recently, whereas the Patriots have just been so consistent. And it kind of feels to me like the Bills are in a bad spot in the sense that they kind of need Josh Allen to like be Superman to win. Yeah. Whereas the Patriots aren't like that. You know, they can, Mac Jones can be average in the Patriots still have a great chance to win. So let's hope, because I played for both, but I have certainly a greater affinity for my time with the Bills. Let's hope that Josh Allen, Superman tonight, and they can win. I also wonder a little bit about, you know, the spot. I wonder if the Bills, you know, two things can happen when you're playing in a huge game like this. You can be all excited and come out and play your best because you realize how big of a game it is against your rival, Monday Night Football. Or you can come out and play a little tight because you know the importance of it. You know what's riding on it. And frankly, deep down in places they don't want to admit, I think the entire Bills organization is scared that their run atop the AFC might have only been a one-year thing and that the Patriots might be back on top. And so I wonder how that manifests itself tonight. I'm leaning New England, at really simply because they've been so consistent over the last 2 months, whereas the Bills have been up and down. So if the Bills are up, they'll probably win, but there's 50% chance it feels like over the last month or so that they'll be down. And if that's the case, certainly New England will win the game.
So if Josh Allen has, you know, incredible night tonight.
That Superman game.
Superman game. And then maybe down the road, he does that against Brady when they match up in a week or two. Then maybe he does it again against the Patriots, or at least two out of those three. Do you think that he's back in that MVP candidate race?
Well, it's going to be tough to beat out Gardner Minshew at this point, based on what Minshew did. No, I'm
every
kidding.
Drive.
Jaguars legend.
You know what? I'm sure he can get back in the conversation, but he's not going to win it. Mm. You know, he had too many bad games, I think, for Josh. I don't know how he could beat out Brady, where Brady's just been pretty consistently awesome. It's weird to me that there isn't more of a Brady's the MVP conversation. It's like people are bored. They want something different. They're tired of the old guy. They want something new. I think we all almost before the year thought it would be Josh Allen or wanted to be Josh Allen, or earlier in the year wanted to be Kyler Murray or something. But it looks like it's going to be Brady, and it almost feels like people are going to vote for him reluctantly. Like, okay, yeah, probably Brady. I mean, there's some serious Brady fatigue going on.
Yeah, I also I got to tell you, I didn't see much of yesterday's game because I didn't put it high on the priority list. I've seen enough of the Falcons this year. Like, they're not good. And it would have been something I guess I probably would have turned on had the Patriots been down. But Tom Brady, I think I said this to you last time you were on, that he's 2 weeks of four touchdowns, 300 yards away from locking up that MVP award. He just put one of them down. I think it should be more a conversation about Rodgers and what happens down the stretch run, but I think that he is just so despised from a narrative standpoint that he's not going to get it, like that some people are going to push back, they're going to make up other things. But when I've watched Brady, I haven't felt like it's been an MVP-type season. He hasn't felt as dominant. It just kind of feels like no one else has. And then when you look at it, you say, hey, well, it actually has been Brady, so it feels more reluctant, but I kind of understand it. I don't think it's just purely because we're, like, sick of Tom Brady. I think that it's like he's been good, not spectacular, not MVP level, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, so I think one of the things that has happened now, and it hurts guys like Brady, mm-hmm. is we want to see, like, MVP moments. We want to see, like, MVP caliber plays. And you almost never watch Tom Brady play and say, wow, did you see that? He just threw, you know, a 9-yard pass over the middle 8 times in a row down the field for a touchdown. Yeah. That was incredible. Like, it's just not like that. Whereas with Lamar Jackson or Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers or Josh Allen, like, when they talk about the MVP, they know exactly which plays they're going to show. How about this play in week 12 when he was rolling right and stopped and then threw this and did this? Brady doesn't have any plays that any of us talk about the next day, ever. He's like death by a thousand paper cuts. He's like the most, to your point, he's like the most boring MVP ever.
Well, they also don't really have any signature win this year. They beat the Patriots in Foxborough. That was supposed to be a big one. Brady had 269 yards, no touchdowns. And if you remember that game, New England really should have won. They were right there. They had it. Brady led a good drive. They ended up getting the field goal. But it just, he hasn't had, when you talk about signature moments, I'm like, yeah, because he hasn't had signature wins. Signature moment for me as a football fan was this discussion about Kirk Cousins potentially being an MVP candidate. I'll take it to my grave. I'll remember it as much as I remembered Alex Smith when he was the MVP candidate for the first 6 weeks of the NFL season. I think that was like 2017. What the hell do the Vikings do here? Because they could end up getting into the playoffs, and I feel like you definitely can't write anybody off in the NFL this season, not all these fringe teams. But, man, losing to the Lions, like, did you see Mike Tice's tweet?
No.
Mike Tice, former coach of the...
I don't follow Mike Tice.
Yeah, he doesn't have a very large social media following. It just got retweeted around, but he tweeted, even my sorry ass didn't lose to the Lions. And I thought, you know, that's true. losing to the Lions, it's got to hit a little bit differently, especially when you give up a drive against a team that has no wins with a minute left in a game and you are a defensive head coach. Like, What happens here, Ross? Is this a total overhaul in the offseason? Is this something that you think can even be changed by the rest of the regular season? Where does Minnesota go from here? Because their fan base is feeling it today.
Yeah, you know, I actually really like Mike Zimmer as a guy. He was a coach when I was in Dallas. He was a D coordinator. Obviously, I'm playing offensive line. But I think it probably is time for a change. Mm-hmm. You know, I think just there are times where a message sort of gets stale and, you know, fresh blood can come in there and maybe get a group that I think has some talent to the next level. It does feel like they've taken a step back defensively. Mm-hmm. And even on offense, they've got really good weapons. Like, when you have, I mean, arguably the best pair of receivers, Cousins has played well. They've got a really good running back, two really good running backs, really, and Dalvin. Like, they should be better. You know, like they should be better. And I know their offensive line isn't great, but they really should be better. My guess is they will make a change at head coach, and I think it's probably ultimately the right decision, even though I do think Zimmer's a pretty good coach. Like, I can see Zimmer going somewhere else, like to the Jaguars, and getting them respectable, but it just feels like his time in Minnesota has really come to an end.
Our time for today has come to an end, but it was great, as always. Ross Tucker, thank you for your time.
Thanks. Absolutely. See you, dudes.
Thanks for the Take Five bars.
Yeah, thank you for the food. Former NFL offensive lineman.
Did you say
I said
waffle?
Falafel, I think.
Big falafel. Send us falafels.
What a success story going from being a falafel to an NFL offensive lineman. It's quite a tale. Host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, rostucker.com. Before we take the break, it doesn't have to be long, just quickly. Oh. Who is that fringe team to you guys that, because I think that right now we should be looking at Cardinals, Packers, I'll say the Bucks, that they're in that class. Patriots, Bills, Chiefs, because we have to find out about Bills, Chiefs a little bit more tonight. So I'm taking six teams off the table as, hey, these to me are the best six teams in football. But then there's this middle of basically everyone in the NFL other than the Jaguars and Seahawks.
How dare you?
I self-deprecated. I came down in the mud with you. It's the two of us. Like, everybody else feels like they're basically in the mix. I'm sure I'm missing some. Well, obviously the Lions, but you never know. The Lions are hot now.
Lions and Bears are hot now.
No, but Lions and Bears are out of it too, and the Saints is currently constructed. It's hard to see it, but maybe they're still in it. But everybody else, who's the frisky team that you could see going on a run, and if they ended up in a Super Bowl, you get to say right now, hey, I told you that I could see it there.
I already forgot all the names you said.
No, you get to pick all the rest of the teams.
Oh, okay.
Out of all the rest of the teams, who do you think could make it? You got to take out the top six. So pick from this list then.
Okay.
Chargers, Raiders, Broncos, Dolphins, Bengals, Ravens, Steelers. I'll even throw the Browns in there. I'll throw the Browns a bone.
Ravens.
Titans, Colts. Okay, so that's who you're on the Ravens. You're also Ravens.
I was going to say Ravens or Titans.
I don't buy the Ravens. I don't think that they can do it. I think Lamar sucks right now. I think that something's up with him. Like, he's just playing indecisive, and he's just not doing it for me whatsoever. Like, he's not elevating their team enough in that defense that's now banged up the way that it is, where I look at them and go, you don't have the horses. Like, you need Miracle Jackson games, and he's someone who got sacked again 7 times yesterday. He's just, like, the league, I hate to say this, but there's a little bit of I'm wondering if they figured him out. Who's yours?
I want to say the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
Analytically, that's the play, and I really believe in their defense.
Mm-hmm.
But the Chargers are close enough that I feel pot committed.
Yeah.
I've been on the Chargers for most of the season and have been riding these waves, and the waves are tough, but I don't feel like I get the switch off of it. They're too close for me to pull the shoot now. So
mine is the Colts. Chargers. Mine's okay. Indy. Nobody paid attention to them this week because they did the thing that you're supposed to do, which is kick the ever-living crap out of the bad team. But if you just look around football, hey, who else did that? I guess the Rams did it, but the Jaguars are like, oof. It's one thing to be even lower than the Texans in a year where the Texans are.
I know Ross was joking, like, about the Gardner Minshew thing.
No, I know. But,
do you know how badly that hurt, that he was like found money and a beloved Jaguar, and there was no need to trade him away?
No.
He could have been your backup, and you only get a sixth for him, and he comes in, and it's like, oh, yeah, he looks remarkably better than.
I just think the Colts are complete. The Colts have a defense. The Colts have a rushing attack. The Colts have an offensive line. The Colts have a really good head coach who I don't think gets actually enough credit in Frank Reich. Everybody mocked them for trading for Carson Wentz, and now he's actually turned into a serviceable player. And people want to say, oh, Wentz is just okay. Frank Reich is really good, and there's a reason that the organization felt that they could give up a first-round pick to go get a guy who was abysmal last year, and it's because of that dude. So I just think there's game scripts for them to go deep, right? Like, I just trust them. If it has to be Wentz winning them ball games, there's no shot. But if they can just kind of get ahead, stick around in ball games, I think that they've proven that they belong with the top-tier teams in the NFL. Like, they're the ones that I could see get hot. Let's take a break. And speaking of staying hot.
Well, I gotta read something first.
I was going to say, Ailish is going to stay hot reading a thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
For the month of December, Sportsnet is a proud supporter of the Rogers Holiday Harmony Project. The Harmony Project is a way for holiday shoppers to connect with equity-deserving businesses across the country, including establishments owned by Black, Indigenous, LGBTQ2S+, women, and people with disabilities. These diverse businesses need your support as we all look to inspire a little more harmony this holiday season. For special gift ideas, please visit rogers.com/holidayharmonyproject and use the hashtag #HolidayHarmonyProject on social media.